and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 613.
That's right. We are talking Absolute Green Lantern. It came out last week?
It was last week. Came out the week you were recording Fantastic Four.
So this is titled Episode 5 With Fear. Al Ewing is our writer. Janoi Lindsay is our art, color, and cover. Lucas Catani is our letterer. Juliet Necka Terso, Alex Ekman Lon, the variant covers, Ash Padilla, assistant editor, Andrew Marino, editor, Katie Kubert, group editor, and Chris Conroy, executive editor. Katie Kubert, group editor, that's got to be for Absolute, right? That's not a GL group editor.
Yeah, it would have to be, because you are correct. That's not our normal editorial grouping from the other books.
Gotcha. Okay, so we open up with Todd Rice being spoken to by the mysterious circle that's been talking to everybody this entire time, saying that judgment is not in progress, be with fear, someone is so on and so forth. He is recovered from the rubble by this team of people who have arrived on the scene. They're telling him not to talk. That's when Hector Hammond, who we got introduced to last time, walks up, fires the guy on the spot, and says, no, you should try to talk to me because I'm the one that's determined whether or not you get help or not. So he tells a lot of this story is this part of the story is from Todd Rice's perspective, talking about how Hal must have thought he was dead because he wouldn't leave me. But I heard what happened. Hal walked up to Abin and asked where Joe was and what happened. And he tells her that she is. Not an anomaly. She is anomaly. And that anomalies cannot exist in the spectrum of light. She will be sought, hunted, be with fear, Hal Jordan, be with. And that's when Hal fires on him, puts several bullets in his chest, saying that's for John and all of them. And then he turns back around to the corpse to aim the gun again. But the Abin reaches up and grabs him by the hand. It looks like his flesh is melting, saying that judgment is in progress. It's judgment, the black hand. It all kind of goes into Hal as he becomes this swirl of melting goop, saying that judgment is not in progress. And Abin, sir, cannot be appointed. How far out is the world that's coming? Be with fear. Fear the black hand. Fear the black star. And Hector Hammond says, good talk, and says, we got to find these people, Hal and Joe Mullian. Who the hell is that? We cut to Joe, who's fighting with Hal. He's explaining basically what we just saw. I thought he killed you, so on and so forth. That's why I pulled the trigger. Inadvertently, she's now the cause of what happened to him. So he blames her in a sense. This thing that's inside of him is also talking to him, that it's because of her he's egging him on. And he says, you're an anomaly. It was you. Take the ring off. Take off the ring, so on and so forth. This triggers a memory in Joe. When her fiance told her to take off her ring, that she swore an oath, we get a version of the oath, sort of referenced here, as this is the flashback to their breaking up scene. She tells her to give back the ring, and, we flash back now to Joe, who says, make me. She starts really fighting back with Hal. It's a big, they're really accessing all of their power. Hal is like fully suited up in this black stuff with red eyes all over him. She's really like almost making full-on constructs, especially towards the end. You'll see her make a pair of wings and stuff like that. But anyways, Hector Hammond and his crew of people are trying to get into the big symbol that came crashing down on the town. It's not even scratching it. Somebody approaches saying there's activity to the southwest. It's Hal and Joe, whose fight is taking them back towards the scene. And he's saying, pull everybody back because we have a puzzle box here that we don't know how to open, and here come the keys. So they're scanning the entire time, recording everything, trying to get as much data as they can about this. And then right as Joe enters the area, the symbol lifts up off the ground and powers up and glowing. She's not the key to the puzzle box. She's the key to the ignition. She lights up the ring. The whole now upright symbol says Sojourner, calls her by name. She reaches out and grabs Hal and tosses him. And the two fly into this symbol. And Hector's like, keep scanning. They fly into it. They disappear into it in a flash of green light and energy. It talks to both of them, names both of them, Sojourner Mullen, Hal Jordan, be without fear. And I believe this may be John inside of the inside of this null space. He's clothed in yellow light and a circle around his chest, telling them to be without fear and to be continued.
Yep. That was the issue, all right.
Oh, so I was going to ask the thing I was going to ask. Did we establish that Joe's partner was female or not?
I forget. I think so.
Not that it matters. It's, you know,
it clearly does matter because the fact that they have to keep it consistent. But so it matters from a creative perspective, because just like it matters what Alan Scott's persuasion is now. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they did establish it in a previous issue that she was gay. But it's also being, or that she's in, well, technically in our book she's bi, but I mean, either way. But I think they did establish that her partner was not male, let's put it that way. In one of the previous issues, I think she talked about it when they were talking about her ring being solid gold. I think that was the issue. But yeah. this book is starting to lose me fast.
Yeah, it's got a lot of, so I wasn't going to start with this, but I might as well. If you, League of Comic Geeks is picking up a little bit of steam. That's the only reason I've been bringing it up so much lately, because there's lots of people posting over there and reviewing things and stuff like that. Much, you know, you'd pull up a comic and, you know, maybe 10 or 15 people would be commenting on something. But now I'm scrolling through pages of reviews and comments and stuff on this one issue. Lots of people are still 4 and 5 stars, but some of those 4 and 5 stars are, yo, something finally happened. one of them is like a 1.5 star saying, I probably should just put this one down. and so on and so forth. I'll get to more in-depth reviews later, because they'll talk to some of the stuff we'll probably talk about here. But it's the fact that some people are just happy with this book because it finally did something and told us something, but it didn't tell us anything.
Not really. I mean, I guess on some level it tells us it may tell us something, but it doesn't put it in context. So it means that much. Like, we understand obviously because of whatever Joe did reaching into Avansur, it short-circuited a lot of things, which is why not just that she's an anomaly, it's just the fact that and again, this was also after Hal shoots Avansur, but the idea that now instead of all that constant beating us to death with the be without fear, became now be with fear, and playing up the Black Hand thing and everything else, which is kind of cool because you can make a case that Hal killed Avansur. And then he basically rose from the dead, or at least partially rose from the dead, which is why and that's when he reached out and made Hal, you know, the Black Hand, and was speaking of this stuff. So it seems like it's all interrelated, that Avansur may not have been something that Avansur had control of when he was alive, but because Hal killed him, then all of a sudden now, you know, he kind of rose as a pretty much almost as a Black Lantern. But we don't, again, and John showing up is yellow, which is weird on one point, on one level. I mean, not on another, because we knew we were going to see John again. based on the way it was written. So that's pretty logical. But it is also very weird, John glowing yellow telling us be without fear, and right in the middle of that, you know, the black ring symbol that basically been doing the narration throughout this entire friggin' book. I don't like, like I mentioned to you, I hate the bastardizing of the oath, tying it into some bullshit between the two of them, between Joe and her fiance, that somehow this is what, somehow that's what the Green Lantern oath, where it may come from in this universe because of some little cutesy thing they were saying to themselves for, like, for better or for worse, to death do you part, that variation. It's like, yeah, no. Again, Joe being, which we'll talk about when we do the Green Lantern Corps review, because Joe has an interesting line of dialogue in that book about something she absolutely should have no context and shouldn't even friggin' know, you can make the case. But the idea that Joe is just, she can do anything, be everything, it seems like Joe is, it seems like what's happening in this issue is that Joe is tapping into the green, and that green symbol just appears to be a power battery. That's what it seems to be, because now Joe is tapping into it and bringing it to life and or powering up from it. So I'm never going to like them putting her up on the pedestal over Hal, even though, again, we don't know. The power, as we've talked about before, it does seem all interrelated, that it's not as maybe diametrically opposed as you would think, even though some of the messages you get in this book, it might be, but like you said, we don't know. It also sucks because we technically really don't know how many issues this series is. It would be nice if we would know if this is a true ongoing, that it may not end for a while, or this is like, we know it's not a 5-issue series now. Maybe it's a 7-issue series. Is it a 12-issue series? It'd be nice to know if this is not an ongoing, when the hell is it going to end? Because it might make it a little more palatable to go at this pace, because you know at least there's light at the end, no pun intended, or maybe intended, light at the end of the tunnel. So you know where, where this journey is going eventually. So it might make it a little easier to just, okay, this is going at a snail's pace to a certain extent, but, and the Hector Hammond stuff isn't doing much for me either. I know it's kind of in character for modern day Hector Hammond to be this way. I get it, but I don't know. This is, the art for the most part is still good in this book, and there are some interesting things here still, but to me it's if it hasn't gotten to the breaking point yet, it's fast approaching. So they really need to do something of consequence soon to give us real context of what's going on here, or else, I mean, obviously we have to still read it, but I mean, I would not be, I do so with a bare level amount of interest, kind of like where I was with War Journal at the end.
Yeah. To speak to the oath thing, I told you in response, I see what you're saying. I think for me, it was just, as I had mentioned to you, a clumsy equivalent of what they did in Earth 2 during the New 52, when they turned Alan's ring that he was going to propose with into his ring that he used as his focus for the power. That was more inelegant an elegant and meaningful version, especially with how they were playing up the way that power worked in that universe and everything. I thought that was a particularly well done version of that. This seems just like a sloppy thing. Oh, we said vows when we got married, right? So let's, oh, we took an oath, so here's the oath. We specifically, that's, yeah. It's clumsy. I see what they were going for, but it's clumsy. Part of the reason, and honestly, I don't have much else to say about this book, because the reason I pulled up all these reviews is because I was struggling to put into words what I thought about this, because I made it very clear going into this series that I was excited for it because I liked Al Ewing. I still do, but I think this one is failing, and I'm struggling with it. And I think it's pretty telling that despite how many positive reviews we're seeing out here, a lot of them start with sentences like, you know, I'm going to be so totally honest, I don't know what this book is about, despite having like 4 or 5 stars. Or, I'm sure this will all make sense in the coming issues, but I'm hoping Ewing moves away from this non-linear drip feed of information for the next major arc. Or, art sucks and the pacing is slow, but we're learning a lot. It seems like just people really struggling to say they're trying to justify the dollar they spend on the few bucks they spend on the issue. But I specifically pulled up two reviews that I wanted to talk about. They're both a paragraph, and I just wanted to say these because I think they perfectly encapsulate together how I feel about this. This one is 3.5 stars. In the latest issue of Absolutely Nothing Ever Happens, we see Joe and, we see Joe and Hal fight, like again. On the cover. The star here would be Hector Hammond, as teased in the previous issue. Well, Al Ewing has fulfilled those promises, but still, we hardly know where this whole story is going. Joe is hardly a protagonist, with both Hal and John having more interesting stories so far, and let me remind you, we are literally right before the end of the first arc. Either issue 6 is a generational masterpiece, or this is going to drag furthermore. I want to trust this story will deliver eventually, but I must admit I feel fatigued at this point. Please, Al, do something. And that's a 3.5 star. Here's a 1 star. I'm baffled by the people praising this comic. We're 5 issues in, and we know nothing about any of the characters. The plot is in exactly the same place it was in the end of issue 1. The nonlinear structure has added exactly nothing to the experience, but instead makes it a painfully simple plot feel difficult to follow. Pro tip, if you're telling a nonlinear story, it helps if the different time periods are visually distinct in some way. There is no way to tell what time a sequence is taking place in, if at all, if all the characters look the same, are in the same location, and are talking about the same things or doing the same things, i.e. fighting endlessly with no resolution. It doesn't help that the art remains unappealing, and that this was advertised as a quote-unquote horror comic, when in practice, it's just a standard capes fighting comic. All in all, this is a thin, fairly shoddy comic that wants to focus on theme and character at the expense of plot, yet fails to develop any of the above. There are comics that are not for me, and then there are bad comics. This is the latter.
Very well-written review, whether you agree with it or not. It's out there. It's simple, but it says it.
Yeah. And again, guys, I encourage you, go to leagueofcomicgeeks.com, see for yourself how many reviews are out there. There are lots of 4 and 5 stars out there for this particular issue. But again, for every 3 or 4 you pass, you're going to either come across a negative one, or you're going to come across a positive one that starts off with, oh, wow, something happened, which is also not good.
No, it's one of those things where it's like everything else. Sometimes people want to like something so much for different reasons. So it's very 2025. So you look the other way about the things that actually stink about it, or things that you would rip apart. If it was writer B writing this book instead of writer A, you would say, oh my God, what the hell are they doing? But because you like that particular writer, it's like, oh, you just have to understand what's going on, or you have to give it more time. Things like that. It certainly has gotten to the point where I'm not really looking forward to this book anymore. I'm not dreading it. I'm not at the point. I'm relatively apathetic about it.
You like it more or less than Dark.
Right, which is funny. After last issue, I would say right now I like it less than Dark. Overall, I would have to be honest. I think – see, it's hard because Absolute started much better. To me, overall, even though we liked Green Lantern Dark 1, but it kind of seemed to bog down a little, and then it mostly was bogging down to like the last issue when it kind of rose. So it's the last taste in your mouth is positive, but yet this book is completely, the trajectory is completely changed, much like War Journal, where it started off pretty good and then kind of kept going downward and downward and downward. And in case it ever did, come back up again, it doesn't matter because it already cratered and it killed your interest. I think I'm actually looking forward to Dark more, not just because the storyline, we know it has an end game, but probably because it's its own thing. So it's easier to kind of accept. Maybe it's a little easier to accept the mystery and what's going on in a world in which it's a whole different universe. As opposed to this, where it still is a whole different universe in Absolute, but they're mining all these same characters that we know, and yet they're changing this and they're changing that, and they're clearly making this a pro Joe comic at the expense of other characters. Now John's probably going to get his moment in the sun, as this issue seemed to show. But I don't really like what they've been doing with Hal. I mean, they're not making Hal clearly out to be a you know, horrible person, because, you know, Hal is actually certainly justified in thinking what he did and acting what he did and doing what he did after, you know, what happened with Joe and the symbol crushing the town and him not knowing, him actually being concerned about Joe's well-being. And he's not exactly wrong that, you know, well, Joe kind of set this whole thing in motion, which, you know, which actually led to him being black-handed, her being this anomaly and everything. That's, it's, you know, she's the one who did kind of set the, not intentionally, but she did set the wheels in motion for all this too. I don't know. They're both in the same boat. I guess because this it's ambiguous when it comes to the where this book is going, not just story wise, but how long it's going to go, because we don't know if there's no confirmation whether it's a true ongoing, whether it's like a maxi series. We don't know. That makes it harder. At least with Dark, we knew it was limited to start with. But there is more, you know, we're getting closer to the end of that story. So I'm probably looking forward to Dark more. And can this book still turn it around? Maybe, but I don't know. I'll be very curious when we go over the sales, when we start going over the sales for this one, to see if the trend that started, at least in the second of the two absolute books, the GL books that came out in the same calendar month last time, which was a pretty precipitous drop, that it'll be interesting to see if right on cue if that was an anomaly, or whether that now starts becoming a trend, at least from the ICV2 perspective, that the absolute Green Lantern now is kind of like is taken on water.
Yeah, I think it would be fair to say that the not all, but some of the positivity that still remains for this series is likely due to the absolute universe effect and its current popularity. Lots of people trying things for the first time. They lack the context you and I, or maybe other listeners to the show have, and are therefore unburdened by it and can just proceed as, you know, with what they're given as they're given it. But I also, because I had mentioned this in a previous episode, Sidion, the streamer that I watch, has continued posting her content on TikTok about getting back into comics. Just the other day, she said she's already dropped Absolute Green Lantern. She's still loving, like, Absolute Wonder Woman, the new Zatanna series, stuff like that. But she just could not get into Green Lantern. But plus side, she did see a lot of the comments that people, including myself, were leaving on her video saying that she should really check out Far Sector. So she'll be giving that a try.
It is a better...
Well, because she as a black woman was excited to see a black woman as Green Lantern.
Yeah, it's a better interpretation or character study of Joe. This is a classic example. This is like, and we've talked about this. We have talked about this before. That, to a certain extent, the editorial has done no favors to the character of Joe by raying her. By trying to make her the bestest ever, and she can do anything at any time, and she can fit, she knows things she should know, and she says the right thing that she shouldn't be saying, or it's not the right person who should be saying it, but it's Joe. The elevation of this character so fast in a pretty unnatural way has not helped people accept the character. Even when, again, like in Far Sector, she was written better, she came across better, not perfect, but she was interesting. But it kind of was but you learned a lot about her over time, and you still liked her. And just like you in all three of the prequels, you liked Rey. You just realized she wasn't being written particularly well. So you kind of liked Daisy Ridley, and you liked the character of Rey. You just said, well, the people that are putting her on center stage are not doing her justice, because they're just asking for trouble by portraying her the way they're portraying her. It's similar to what they're doing, and they've been doing with Joe ever since Far Sector. Is that they keep elevating her up and putting her in this position that she doesn't really deserve to be in, literally because she hasn't done anything to earn it in the context of the Green Lantern Corps. If she was still doing stuff on her own outside the Corps, then that would be a different story, because that's her own personal journey. But she shouldn't have that kind of clout or weight or knowledge in the Green Lantern Corps, because she's been in the Green Lantern Corps for like 2 minutes compared to everybody else. And that includes Simon and Jessica, let alone everybody else who we know has been in the comic books for eons. So I don't think that helps. I mean, it might poison the well if this was your first intro into Joe or some of the other stuff to go back and read Far Sector after. Though I guess that's, you could kind of like get kind of be rehabilitated in retroactively that way, as opposed to, you know, it's starting off positive. It's like, what did they do to her? I don't know. I just think it's not helping this book. It's not the only problem, clearly, with this book, but I don't know. I wish something would pick up here in a positive way, but it's
still possible. Like I'm not trying to, you know, blindly support the writer, but I've so enjoyed some of what he's done in the past to such a great extent. I still hold out a little bit of hope, whether it's founded or not founded, that he's building to something that'll give us a nice payoff that will kind of make lots of everything that we've been talking about make more sense later on. Like, he's building the mystery, but he's going to really pay it off. But if he doesn't, then we have to just call a spade a spade.
Yeah. And we'll talk about in great detail next week when we talk about Green Lantern Corps. Like, we talk about the ending, the ending of that issue. It's like, okay, if we get some real explanation in the next issue after that, which would be what, Green Lantern 26. If we get an explanation for why what we see at the what we're seeing and not seeing at the end of Green Lantern Corps 6, if we get an explanation for why what we're seeing, we know as Green Lantern readers, doesn't really mesh, because there's things that we're seeing that shouldn't be there. And whatever. And again, I don't want to go into great detail. But if we get an explanation for that early on, then that's just classic comic book storytelling, where you get a big splash page at the end. Something is shocking. It's like, either it doesn't make any sense, or it's like, well, I want to find out what the story is behind this. You get back, come back next month. You get the story. Then it's like, okay, cool. It's not a continuity error. It's fine. It's normal comic book storytelling. If they follow the pattern of like something else in that issue that we were talking about for eons that they never even touched upon for like about, I believe, as my tabulation, I believe it was 16 issues since the time they should have touched upon it, that they finally come back and reference on, oh yeah, this is a thing. If they do that, then that's a problem, because then it makes no sense, because it's like, why the rebel? It's way too late for the moment of reveal and explanation when the questions are going to be fresh in people's minds. So it's kind of like you can only kick the can down the road so long. And that's what happened with War Journal. They kind of stretched it out. And then by the time they stretched it out, they combined it with a lousy reveal. And boom, that was the kiss of death for that book. So we'll see.
And the solicit for Absolute Green Lantern 7 is out. It says, how far out is the world that's coming from across the depths of space? The Black Stars are turning their attention towards Earth, and only Tomar Rae stands in their way. And we have John, as we see him at the end of this issue, on the cover. So we're getting another character. John's going to be sticking around. We're focusing on another thing with the Black Stars, the threat that's coming to Earth. We know Hector's going to be part of this own... It's not going to be called Legion of Doom, but they're sort of building their own Absolute Universe Legion of Doom, because they're going to have a series for that group. And there's some big threat that's coming and all kinds of stuff. So it really is Absolute Green Lantern 6 that needs to deliver some sort of satisfaction. So with that in mind, I think it's fair to say that despite them moving to the next arc with 7, if 6 doesn't pay off, you can't really blame people for dropping the book.
No, I would think that's true. I think that would be more than fair. And I mean, it's still better than War Journal, or what War Journal became at this point. Even at the halfway point, I would still say, even though I don't know, I think we might have, like 5 issues in or whatever, I think we, or what was this, 6 or 5?
This is five.
Yeah. This was right, 5.
Yeah.
I think we still were. I still think we were kind of like in War Journal.
Yep.
at that point, probably more than this book where we are right now. I think we probably
issues with it, but we didn't really start disliking it until the Olgrin reveal.
Yeah. The Olgrin reveal was the kiss. That was absolutely 100% for a large percentage of the readership, the kiss of death on that book, because it's like we've been building towards something, a reveal of relevance, and it was a reveal of non-relevance. And obviously, by some people who even read, you know, his Warworld stuff, it still was a reveal of complete non-relevance. So it was just horrible. That was just a vanity thing. It seemed a vanity piece, vanity project. But we'll see. At least, as you mentioned today, when we talk about Green Lantern Corps, at least there will be stuff to talk about related to that. At least what we both think about it and what the masses think about it. That's another story potentially. But at least there's that. I guess that, well, the one thing we will have to say, there at least is meat on the bone to pick apart in that issue, as opposed to the majority of the issues we've gotten across the board lately, when there probably hasn't been much.
Yeah. I don't hate this book. I don't, you know, because it, you know, the criticism that I have for this particular issue and everything is just frustration that's been building, because we've been talking about how, you know, the nonlinear storytelling and the kind of cryptic stuff that Abin is saying and all this stuff, it needs to pay off soon. Well, now we're 5 issues in, and, you know, especially with 6 supposedly ending this arc, we need something to happen, and it's just getting more and more frustrating. So I maintain a little bit of faith that hopefully Al can pay things off, but we shall see.
Abin can't be any more cryptic. He's dead. it's like one of those cliche things on your deathbed. It's like, I just have to tell you. Flat lines. Yes.
All right, what's next?
Let's ever just so quickly do what Mark has seen, because I was supposed to see Weapons last week, but that didn't pan out. So the only thing I did see was Naked Gun the week before that, and while I will openly admit I may be in the minority on this one, based even though I've seen some people echo my sentiment on this. And I went in really, I went in really fully believing this movie was going to be funny. I didn't think it was that funny. There are a few moments when I laugh. The ongoing coffee joke is cute. There are a few moments that I think are genuinely funny. But as far as laugh out loud funny, that you're constantly laughing, even whether it's stupid humor, whether it's not stupid humor, stuff that the original Naked Gun movies and Airplane, they did so well. No, I thought objectively, like I said, I may be in the minority on this one, but I thought objectively this movie was pretty non-funny. That probably at least 70 or 80% of what they were throwing at you just kind of like just landed with a thud. Liam Neeson was good in it. You know, I think he was a good choice for this kind of role, because we're so much like Leslie Nielsen back in the day before he really became quote unquote famous doing all his comedies, he was known as a serious actor. So because he just played everything deadpan, it kind of made things that made the humor even better. So in a way, Liam Neeson's track record of being a serious actor and being, you know, the late in his life action star kind of makes this work from a casting perspective. I don't think the casting was the issue. I just don't think it was particularly funny. So that's kind of disappointing to me anyway.
Yeah, I got that feeling from the trailers.
All right. So I'm not sure if Chad has anything else, but there's one last thing that I have, which is weird because this popped up. I noticed this on August 1st, but we were talking about Fantastic Four next week. So last week, so it didn't make any sense to bring it up then, but I noticed HBO Max has changed the setting on theirs, which, and I'm be curious if anybody else out there has experienced this too, that what they've done, it's kind of like a chain reaction. Adding in this feature and or if they had it before, it was never defaulted as on, and now it was defaulted on. That by itself wouldn't be a big deal, except that now it affects things when you turn it off. Things don't work the way they did. And that's that I noticed on August 1st, and it could have possibly been in effect 1 or 2 days before, but I don't think so. It would make sense if they were going to make a change. It would be in the beginning of the month that they've added in as a default playing suggested or recommended movies and series, which essentially means when it's on it, it's going to act like Tubi acts, that if you're watching something that it potentially is going to take you into a movie or a TV show of its choice based on its algorithm that might be similar. The interesting thing about that is that it does not seem to do it with everything when it's turned on. It only seems, based on my playing around with it so far, it only does it with things that have been recently added back into or on for the first time, but something relatively new into the platform right now. So I found it out on Final Destination Bloodlines because I fell asleep watching something, woke up. It was like 5 a.m. I was going back to bed, but I said, hey, I think this was the day Bloodlines was coming on. So I put it on HBO Max and put it on Bloodlines and fell asleep. Woke up like 2.5 hours later, and it was playing Final Destination 5. It's like, why the hell is it doing that? And I didn't have to get up early that day, or I really didn't have anything to do. That day I was mostly off, so I said, okay, let's see what happens next. So I went to Final Destination, which is weird as that sounds if you're looking at the inciting incident based in chronological order. That is not really out of order, but it was just dumb luck. I'm not going to give credit to the algorithm because I've done it multiple times. And one time I went from Bloodlines to Final Destination 4 to Final Destination 5 back to Final Destination 4. So the algorithm isn't smart enough to just pick up and start playing the series and absolutely verbatim in entire order over, no matter where your jumping on point is. It did it with Couples Retreat too. And I don't know why they play The Hangover because the humor in those two movies is nothing alike. And they did it with Alien Covenant. And they go to The Martian. That's the thing that's annoying, too. It seems like they always go to the same movie. So they go from Alien Covenant to The Martian, and they go from Couples Retreat to Hangover. But they don't do it with everything, like I mentioned, because I tried doing it with Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire to see if they would play any Harry Potter movie, let alone playing Order of the Phoenix next, and it didn't. What it did is exactly what the problem is if you turn that feature off. When you turn that feature off, when the movie stops or the show stops, It shows you the screen of the movie it's recommending next, but it just hangs up. It doesn't time out. When you used to play a movie on HBO before they had this feature in, you'd play a movie. If the movie ended, if you were asleep, probably like 15 minutes later, the app would time out. Then eventually the Fire Stick would time out and everything would shut off on its own. Now it just hangs up on that suggested movie screen. And I've gone as far as like an hour and a half. And it's even weird because it obviously must be still sending a signal to the Fire Stick because not even the default screensaver kicks on. But usually the screensaver on the Fire Stick will kick on like after maybe like 10 or 15 minutes of the screen being paused on something. It'll go into the screensaver before the app itself actually times out to take you back to the Fire Stick homepage. It will go to the screensaver, but this never goes to the screensaver. So it's obviously still sending some kind of slight signal through the Fire Stick, which interrupts even the ability of the thing to just time out on its own to shut down. So I thought that was interesting. I reached out to them, and they didn't have any pearls of wisdom other than the basics like, you can, log out, log back in, which that one, to be fair, I have not tried logging out and logging back in again. But, uninstall the app and reinstall it. I've tested it on another Fire Stick. I tested it on the Fire Stick at my mom's house, and it did the same exact thing. So it's obviously an issue related to the app. There must have been an update in the app related that even if it only affects Fire Sticks, it affects Fire Sticks, not just one device. So I don't think I'm going to run the risk of uninstalling the friggin' app. I'll just hope they fix it at some point, but it does suck. Cause that was one of the channels or platforms I would typically put a movie on at different times. I get into a kick, put a movie on to fall asleep to, and I guess now technically I could, but it's either going to be hung up on that screen for hours, which is not good for the screen, or I got to go back and put the default back on to play recommended series and movies. But I thought that was an odd change because obviously that was not the way the platform operated previously.
Yeah, I was going to ask if it's just a Fire Stick thing because I know like I was trying to watch in the lead up to Rebirth, Jurassic Park or Jurassic World Rebirth, I was watching all the Jurassic Park movies in order. And I started to try and watch Dominion. Was it Dominion or Fallen Kingdom? I think it was maybe Fallen Kingdom.
On Tubi?
No, I was trying to watch Fallen Kingdom in my at-home, Fandango at-home library, formerly known as Vudu. And I was getting an error that it was not licensed for Apple TV. But I have, it's not a Fire Stick, it's Roku. Roku? I have a Roku on my other TV in my bedroom, and I was able to open up at Fandango at home on the Roku and watch Fallen Kingdom with no issue. Same account, different device. So it was strange. I don't know what the licensing is about, whether or not it can play on a specific device as opposed to the app. I don't know what that's all about. But yeah, I've seen some weird things with streaming services.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. Like I said, it was weird just the fact that it certainly wasn't what I was expecting, because I had watched Goblet of Fire, I think, again. I put that on to fall asleep to. And the fact that I fully expected because I had fallen asleep watching something on Tubi, it was around 2:30 when I realized, it was like, hey, it's almost 3 o'clock, and that means it's almost midnight Pacific time. And I was pretty sure that was the day they were going to be adding in Bloodlines. I was like, oh, maybe I should just switch to HBO Max now. And I said, nah, I'll just finish this movie. But then I fell asleep on it. So I got up, brush my teeth, wash my face, and then I put Bloodlines on. And I knew I was planning on just falling asleep, so it didn't matter. But the fact that it's like I fully expected to wake up like around 8 or 8:30 and everything turn off, because that's what normally happens. That's what still happens on Disney Plus. It still happens on Netflix, because usually the way mine is set up, the default on the sound bar is like I think 10 minutes without signal it turns off, and I think it usually is like around 10 or 15 minutes of inactivity that you will already be done going through the screensaver normally if you just pause a movie, it normally is 10 or 15 minutes later the app will completely time out, and then maybe another 10 minutes or 15 minutes max later the Fire Stick homepage will time out, so then the Fire Stick will basically turn off or go to sleep, and the TV goes off too. So that's what I'm used to doing. I thought it was very, very odd that it did that. And it is disappointing, because it's not the end of the world, because again, it's not like I can't just leave the autoplay on, even though I guess it sucks that it keeps going to the, at least in the case of not Final Destination, but it's like A Couple's Retreat and Alien Covenant. It just sucks. It keeps always going back to the same movie. I guess, I mean, I don't mind the feature. Like I said, I don't mind having that option. It would be nice. Just like Tubi. I mean, I never even knew you could turn that feature off on Tubi, for the hell of it, I looked at the settings the other day. You can actually turn off the settings that automatically play a series of the movie afterward. But I'm so used to that being how the platform works, I'm not going to play around with it. But I don't care having that option. I just wish if turning it off would mean it would operate the way it did before they put it on. And obviously it isn't, because it shouldn't be hanging up like that. So even though I guess if I want to be optimistic, maybe this is the first step to finally, I doubt it though, the first step to maybe giving me what I think whichever streaming platform does this, they're going to strike gold first, being allowed to create a playlist. That when they let you make a playlist that are movies that are on their platform, put them in the order that you want to watch, give it a name, and if you just want to play that playlist, you hit play. Just like you can do in any friggin' audio player known to man, going back to when you were just burning discs and media player and real player and all this stuff. That's what's, I don't know why they haven't done that for streaming yet, but that would be great. So you could put the movies, if you want to put the Final Destination movies on in whatever order you want, you make a playlist, hit play, and it just keeps playing them all till it ends.
And Fandango at Home does that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool then.
I guess it's not technically a streaming service since you have to buy.
Right, but I know, it's something that when you think about it, you can't do it on Tubi, you can't do it on Netflix, you can't do it on Disney Plus. It just boggles my mind why you can't. I mean, but I guess mostly from the fact that I don't think the technology should be that difficult to do, but because they don't. I mean, because if you can play your queue list in an order. Then in theory, if they made you make multiple queue lists, you could kind of subvert it by doing the same thing. But they don't even let you do that. Even if you wanted to, you couldn't just say, I want some background noise. I'm gonna hit play on my queue list, and it's gonna go in whatever. Even if you couldn't arrange it in any order that you wanted, it just played it by the most recent additions to your watch list, and it just. But it's just one of those things that someday somebody's going to do it, and it's going to make people happy, because I think it's cool to be able to do that, especially when you have a bunch of movies in a particular series or a franchise that you could just sit there and you could just play them instead of having to go from one to the next to the next to the next, which is kind of nice when Pluto does that. When Pluto either has a channel dedicated to a certain franchise or brand, or when they have the Saw movies on one of them, either on the Horror Channel or the Terror Channel or whatever. Almost always when they had the rights to the first 7 Saw movies, you could take it to the bank. If you happen to catch Saw 2 playing, you could take it to the bank. 9 times out of 10, it's going to play all the Saw movies in order till it ends, and then sometimes it just begins and loops around again, depending on. But it's just something, again, I noticed. I'd be curious if anybody out there has experienced it too, but it depends how you use HBO Max. You may not have noticed it as much if you're not used to putting it on and falling asleep with it on. But it's one of the things that I noticed immediately. It's like, wow, that's a big loss on one level. But you know, I don't think it's enough for me to uninstall the app and reinstall it. I think I'll roll the dice that maybe at some point it'll be updated in one way or the other, whether it's the Fire Stick updating again, or whether the HBO Max app will update and solve that problem.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of lists already on Fandango at home. I've got all the DC animated movies in order, the Marvel movies, the Bourne movies, Star Trek, the more recent Star Trek movies, Lord of the Rings, Underworld, X-Men movies, music movies, the Arrowverse stuff, Terminator franchise, since I said I wanted to start that at some point. I have that ready to go. So yeah, it lets you at least, but that's, again, it's a library, not necessarily a streaming service. But anyways, I had two quick things I wanted to talk about. Nothing in terms of comics releasing next week. We're recording this August 13th. Nothing new comes out Green Lantern wise in terms of a Green Lantern issue. But did we talk on air? I know you and I talked about it, but was it on air about Justice League Red coming up?
I don't think so.
Okay. For those of you playing along at home, there will be, and I'm told this is a limited series, Justice League Red, which is spinning out of the Justice League Unlimited stuff that's currently going on in comics. There's some big events happening thereof. This is just going to be a little spinoff, and it's got the new Red Canary, which we saw introduced in, what was the storyline, the big one? That happened. We were just talking about it this episode. Where all the Justice League died.
Dark Crisis.
Yes. We got introduced to Red Canary in Dark Crisis. She's been a mainstay a little bit with the Arrow book, though apparently recently left. The team consists of Red Canary, Power Girl, Cyborg, one of my personal favorites, Deadman, Simon Baz, and is being headlined essentially by Red Tornado, who's currently the sort of AI, because he doesn't have a body right now, unless, like, I'm a little behind on Justice League Unlimited. Maybe they built him a body. I don't know. But he's sort of the brains behind Justice League right now in terms of who goes where and what team and what mission they take on. So all that to say, Simon Baz is going to be part of a team book that starts next week. So this week, if you guys are hearing this as it drops, and that's Justice League Red. Interesting. I'll obviously be paying attention for Deadman purposes, and yeah, as the Green Lantern individual, I'll of course be paying attention to how Simon is executed. I will say that Justice League Red is being written by, and I forgive me for the name pronunciation, Saladin, Saladin Ahmed. And one of the very top comments over here on Justice League of Comic Geeks, I think it's actually cool that Simon Baz is written by a Muslim writer for the first time. And I was clicking through, and there are some people that are excited for some Simon Baz stuff. I'm seeing, I think Simon is super underutilized, and I'm happy to see him get any kinds of focus that isn't drowned out by other Human Lanterns. I agree, he is underutilized. Obviously,
that was Dan writing it. another alias. Cut it out, Dan.
I'm glad Simon will be used more, because I don't know how much Adams will really focus on him in the core series. Again, just reinforcing the idea, every Lantern is somebody's favorite. We may not care much for Simon, but for those of you who are part of our listener base who are still Simon fans, first of all, thanks for sticking with us despite us trashing your favorite character.
but we do trash him, but to be fair, we also try. We just don't try not to talk about him all that much.
The minute they do something really cool with him, and even you said, was it the last?
Oh yeah, that was the one shining Simon. Moment no. that should have that yeah. absolutely logically should have been Simon, but they had to give it to Joe.
Yeah. So like, I think we can be at times fair to Simon, but if you're looking for Simon stuff, Justice League Red, I think it's like a 6-8 something like that series, I believe is what I heard. Obviously. Every comic book series, if it just does gangbusters, will probably become an ongoing, but that's that. The other thing I wanted to mention is something that I showed you message-wise the other day that I bought on eBay, and I just sent you another photo because I found another one. Just so you folks playing along at home know, I'll probably, I don't know, maybe I'll make a post on the website. I don't know that it'll merit a video. I'll do something to talk about this because I can't find information on this partnership between DC Comics and the US Olympic team. But for some reason, back in 1995, 1996, there were a string of enamel pins put out where like it was Superman and featuring the U.S. shot put team. And by the way, it wasn't like, you know, the team was on there, the actual team members, but it just, you know, said U.S. shot put. And then it had a picture of Superman or these various things. There was a Steel one. There was a couple of Aquaman ones. There was a few Wonder Woman ones. There was one of the Wonder Woman ones was for archery. It's, you know, we have an archer, but whatever. But there was a Green Lantern one I found on eBay, you know, because, again, I search for eBay for Green Lantern and just sort by ending soonest. And it just happened to pop up one day of the Kyle Rayner with the gymnastics team logo. Well, I found another one, which is Kyle Rayner for the Triathlon Federation USA. I'm pretty sure. Sorry, everybody playing along at home. I'm pretty sure I got the two cheapest available ones of both of those two Green Lantern pins that are currently available on eBay. So anybody else who's interested in these, if you can find them on eBay, is probably gonna have to pay more than I did. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. I just thought it was so weird. I had never heard of this. And it was even weirder that no matter what combination of keywords I can find and put together, I can't find any information on this partnership between DC and the US Olympic team. But it's this random niche out there that somehow existed back in the mid 90s. A random partnership with random enamel pins. By the way, it's super 90s because one, Kyle Rayner, two, the Aquaman pins are Aquaman with his hook hand. So.
Yep.
Oh, and one of the featured characters being Steel, as opposed to anybody else.
And to be fair, and again, the mere fact that it's Kyle tells you that it's got to be the 90s.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, because, yeah, he was still technically Green Lantern until the early 2000s, but the bloom was off the rose long before Green Lantern Rebirth. Yeah, they certainly are interesting finds. I still wouldn't be surprised if at some point they even if they weren't being sold also at like maybe at WB at the Warner Brothers stores and things like that, because Lord knows, God, I miss the Warner Brothers store. They had such cool stuff.
Yeah, that every now and then the like those animation cells and stuff will pop up on eBay.
Yeah, it's one of those things that was one of the unfortunate side effects. I forget what the language was, but it was the byproduct of the AOL Time Warner merger. There was something about the language of that, I think, that prevented them from – they had to get rid of those stores. I'm not sure why, but there was something about that, maybe because of monopolies or whatever. There was something that made – and that's the – I think that was the main catalyst for why they closed all the Warner Brothers stores. But I really miss – the one in Danbury, I always used to – that was always a fun trip. Even if I just went once a month to that – Warner Brothers store over in Connecticut, that they would always have something new. Doesn't mean it was anything fantastic, but just going once a month, the odds were so strong you were going to find some. And obviously the Green Lantern stuff was relatively limited at that time, even though you did find some of the like your Beanie Babies. That's where I got all the Hal Beanie Babies all the Hal Beanie Babies from, and I got my first like green, my Hal Jordan Green Lantern glass I got from there. And they don't, it's, you started getting more Green Lantern stuff as time went by. Plus I had that cool art piece that I never did get, the one with all the, with the hand drawn things by, was it Gil Kane? I think with all the six characters, yeah, including Parallax, I think that I should have gotten that one in retrospect, but nonetheless, but you could always find stuff, especially when, and that, but yeah, it's cool. It's certainly a cool find, and especially cool if you're a Kyle fan, because Lord knows that was the ever so brief heyday, just like the Six Flags hats that I have, which have, of course, have Kyle on them because they come from the 90s, and he was the main one they were pushing in the 90s.
Yeah, you sent me one of those. It doesn't fit my fat head, but I have it.
Yeah, you need to shrink that head, Chad. Incentive.
But if anybody out there knows anything about these, please write in and tell us, because I cannot for the life of me find any information about it, which is partly why I want to do a post about this somehow, because like the fact finding nothing, not even an obscure random side alley blog post or Reddit thread or something about almost anything in this day and age is probably unheard of. The fact that you just can't find any information. So, you know, I'd like to be that location if anybody ever looks for that in the future. Hey, the Lantern Cast seems to be the only place that has any information on these pins. You know, how many people do I think are actually going to Google that? I don't know, but, you know, why not be the first? So yeah, it's out there. Try and find it. It's some combination of Green Lantern, USA, Olympic, and look for it on eBay. You'll find something. And if not, just look for sold listings, because I bought two, one of the gymnastics and one of the triathlons. So, well, that remains to be seen. But yeah, also, by the way, for those of you who like my little eBay excursions, I did recently pick up the first appearance of Sonar. So I now have that in my collection.
That is another good addition for you, my friend.
Yeah, it was a good deal. I will say, though, it's probably my most beat up copy of GL I've bought in a while, because the cover is fully detached. So I usually don't go for those, but despite the cover being detached, the cover was in good shape, if that makes any sense. So it's better than like those comics that you get where like it's very clear that the cover has been torn off and it's they actually printed out a replacement cover. Guys, when you're looking on eBay for things, read the description. I'm telling you, be very, very careful, because I've seen a couple where I'm like, oh, that looks cool. That looks like it's in pretty good. Oh, so be very careful. But if people want to write in, let us know if they're excited about Simon Baz or what they're thinking about Absolute, or if they know anything about these pins, what do they do?
Well, before we do that, it's completely minor and stupid, but since you triggered my mind, it reminds me of, because you were talking about Simon in relation to execution. Did you ever hear the, back when, I think this was either in 76 or 77, but it was right after the Buccaneers were born, during their horrible like 26 game losing streak before they finally won a game. Did you ever hear the cute little anecdote of when the head coach of the Buccaneers, John McKay, was asked about as related to execution? It's just, let me preface it that way. The execution comment.
No.
So, and it made me laugh, because I'm thinking about this in relation to Simon, but only kidding. So these are mostly kidding. That after another loss, one of the reporters asked Coach John McKay, what do you think about your team's execution? And without missing a beat, he said, I'm in favor of it. Nowadays, he probably would get fired for that.
You mean like Jerry Jones being caught on mic the other day saying that it's basically the Cowboys organization is just like a money-making soap opera?
Yeah, but because of how sensitive people are about even joking about that, but it was if you ever have time to kill and you like just like go on YouTube probably and Google like John McKay quotes or Tampa Bay Buccaneers John McKay quotes, because Because he had a lot of them. Like, he talked about, it's like, we've now, paraphrasing maybe slightly, it's like, we've now proven that we can't win at home or on the road. So what we really would prefer is a neutral site. But the execution one is funny because he had such a deadpan sense of humor. And obviously the reporter never expected it coming. It's like, what do you think about your team's execution? I'm in favor of it. It is really funny when you stop and think about it. And on that note.
Yeah, now that you mothballed my segue.
I didn't know you were giving me the segue. I was going to say it, but then you went off into the second thing. So you went off into the pin things, and then there was no natural segue for me to do one or the other. So if I'm ambitious, maybe I'll cut that joke and we'll throw it at the end after the credits. So then your segue will still be intact. All right. So lanterncast@gmail.com, the website lanterncast.com, the emails lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, use hashtag GLcast to track us down there. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Yeah, something Mark just said, it. He says it all the time, but it just every now and then we like to touch on it. If you do leave us a review anywhere out there, it doesn't matter the platform, reach out and let us know. lanterncast@gmail.com or call the voicemail line because we don't get notifications when you guys leave reviews, and it's been a while since we've read any on air or gotten any new ones. So if we have any new listeners or newish listeners, and you maybe you've been listening for a while but you've never left a review, please do so. Reach out, let us know, give us a link or a screenshot or something so we can find it, and we'd love to talk about those in the future.
Yes, we would, and Lord knows, we at some point soon, we're gonna have to dedicate an entire episode to feedback, just because we've been slacking off on it.
For sure.
Well, it's not truly slacking off. There's been so much content related to the books, and of course,
Mark doesn't want to acknowledge the guy that's giving me my just desserts.
Oh, that! See, I almost forgot about that. But you're right. And to be fair, we haven't made a joke, but we haven't made a joke about it for a couple of weeks now. But yes, but it's more because we've been so busy between the Green Lantern content, and we had obviously a busier than normal month of movie reviews. So we will, especially with Green Lantern Dark about to come to an end, there'll be at least one less book to have to review every other month. So if nothing else, that will allow one or two probably episodes if need be. We just really need to have one big one and just kind of try to be a little more succinct, at least maybe in answering them, and at least burn through, if not all of them, at least like 90% of what we have. But yeah.
And that's a good time for you guys to let us know about any reviews so we can include it in that episode. So definitely do so. Talk to you later, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.